Hey, it's Simon. I'm with the Edge Show live at Tech Air North America. It's been a really busy week in Orlando. A lot of exciting announcements around System Center 2012, but more importantly, Server 2012. And that's what we're here to focus on. One of the big new themes with all the planning around this release has been continual availability. I'm here with June and Klaus, who are some of the leaders, some of the experts in all of our continual availability planning. Why don't you guys introduce yourself?
Thank you, Simon. My name is Klaus Jorgensen. I'm a program manager in the Windows File Server team. I've been with Microsoft for 14 years.
And I'm Gene Chellis. I've been with Microsoft 15 years, and I'm the Director of Program Management for Windows Storage and Availability.
Excellent. So some real file server experts here. So tell me, what were some of the key planning ideas, planning scenarios that we came up with when we looked at how could we improve service availability?
Well, as you know, Simon, we planned Windows Server 2012 around these ideas of pillars that where we could get the entire organization focused on making end-to-end scenarios work. So continuous availability was one of those planning themes, and we looked at that holistically. We wanted to make sure that we could address availability across the board. So we looked at it for individual servers. How could we make individual servers more available, less downtime? How could we improve availability even more by using clustering technologies with clustering for the applications, but also clustering and high continuous availability for the storage? And then finally, virtualization and some work around disaster recovery for simple disaster recovery solutions.
So it looks like really continual availability throughout the stack, from the hardware to the OS to the application. So I guess let's start with the hardware. What are some of the new features that we've added around actually keeping, you know, the memory running, keeping our disk running, making those better?
Yeah, so one of the core things we did was basically introducing the concept of a storage pool, storage virtualization, and resiliency. So you can take a number of disks and you pool them together, and then you create these spaces out of that, and then you set the resiliency on that space, which could be a mirror configuration where data is duplicated across multiple disks, or you can set parity where you have multiple disks storing data and then you have one or more disks storing the parity for that data. And that means that if you lose a disk, then you still have availability of your data. Another thing we did was basically addressing the check disk. So if you have a large file system with a large number of files, in the past it would take some time to actually perform check disk.
Sometimes
extremely long. Now what we've done is we basically separated the process into two processes. There is the scanning process where we find out what's wrong. That is now completely online, and that takes up the majority of the time when you perform a check disk. And then there's the fixing part where you figure out, so what actually in the scanning part was wrong, and then the fixing part is just the fixing it. So in that only that small amount of time, we actually need to take the volume offline, fix the parts, and then we bring it up online, which typically reduces the check disk runtime from hours, days, down to seconds. We're talking 2 or 3 seconds for a typical run. Well, if any errors is found at all.
So really improving the disk resiliency. And you mentioned if you lose a disk, we could recover from that. Could you elaborate on that a little more?
Yeah, so in a storage-based configuration, let's say you have a very similar configuration with a couple of drives, and you lose one of the drives. Because the data is also available on another drive, that means that at this point you have one drive available with data, so data is still available to you as a user or application. And then you remove the faulty drive, and then you replace it with a functional drive, and then the storage space simply moves the data or copies the data back, so we're now resilient again.
Very nice. Now, I heard there's also some improvements around the memory. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yes. That was really to address situations where we're seeing larger and larger hardware, particularly with virtualization. So you might have a machine that has lots of cores and lots of memory. We've seen machines with 256 or even up to a terabyte of memory with hundreds of VMs running on that host. So with that much memory, hardware faults in the memory that used to cause blue screens became an issue. So what we did was create a way to isolate that, working with the hardware vendors. So if you have the hardware and firmware that will report to the operating system that it's found a memory error, then the operating system now will try to isolate that. It'll isolate, figure out if that memory is being used. If it's not, it will just mark it as unavailable. If it is being used, we can isolate it to an application or a VM, and there's actually even an API for the application to register so that it can try to handle the memory error. If it can't be handled, we might have to take the application or VM down, but it'll be isolated to that one app or VM rather than to the entire operating system and all the VMs running on it.
Right, I mean, that's important. You know, we've seen with all of this virtual machine consolidation, you have more VMs on a host. If you blue screen, you could potentially lose a lot more. So that isolation is going to be great for just this virtualization
scenario. Lots of eggs in one basket.
Well, let's move up the stack a little more and talk about the operating system, specifically clustering, one of my favorite topics, having spent some time on the team. Tell us, what are some of the big new enhancements we made around clustering in this release?
Well, the biggest things that clustering did was, you know, two of them. One is increase the scale. Clustering used to be able to support in Windows Server 2008 R2 up to 16 nodes. It now can support up to 64 nodes and up to 4,000 VMs running on
that.
Best
in industry right now,
yep. So that's a big number. They've spent a lot of work on the scale of high availability with clustering. But also working with this concept of continuous availability, and we'll talk about that with storage, we needed to be able to fail over a file server or another application within a short enough period of time that the application using the storage wouldn't see the error. So we had to make that all work a lot faster, and with a cluster with lots of resources under load, there were lots of things to do to make the processes all work more in parallel so we could get the failover to happen within a few seconds rather than it used to sometimes take minutes, but that was too long for a continuously available operating system.
Right, yeah, there was a lot of parallelization that was done by the cluster team, so yes. Bring things online, offline, fail them over simultaneously.
Exactly.
And that's not just virtual machines with the simultaneous live migration feature, that's any application running on top of the cluster has been enhanced, right?
Yes, so any application that uses clustering will get the benefit of that.
Great. Now, I see you actually have a demo. Are you going to show us some of the clustering here?
Yes, I will. So this is specific to the next layer up, where we run a file server in a cluster configuration. And in the demo here, I have a SQL server that is basically, as you can see here, with the UNC pass, /, etc. You can see that this particular SQL Server database is stored on a remote file share.
And that's new in Server 2012 as well, because you,
We did a large number of things. Sorry.
No, that's fine.
We did a large number of things to make the file server continuously available, as Dean was talking about earlier, to these server applications, right? One of the core scenarios is to allow server applications, in this case SQL Server, to store databases on remote file shares, similar to how Hyper-V will also support storing their virtual machine files on remote file shares. So here I'm running a SQL OLTP workload. We can see in performance monitor here that we are running around, this is SQL transactions per second. We're doing roughly 6,000 transactions per second. If we go take a look at, this is the performance monitor that is looking at the activity against the file shares. So here we are running roughly around just shy of 200,000 IOPS against the remote file server. Now, so let's say, so this is all well and good, right? I can do a lot of business with 200,000 IOPS and 6,000 transactions a second, but I need to perform some hardware maintenance on one of my cluster nodes. So what we can do is here is we can, in preparation for that maintenance, we switch to cluster manager. So this is the failover cluster manager. As you can see, I have two file servers here, represented by the -A and -B at the end. So they're running on two different nodes in the cluster. So what I'm going to do now, since this is a two-node cluster, I'm going to move one of them over to the remaining nodes. So basically, both of them are going to be running on one node, so I can perform maintenance on the other, on the other one.
Now, with clustering in the previous releases, this would have downtime, right?
You'd
have to offline the resources, offline the disk resource, fail it over, bring everything back online, reconnect the clients.
Yes. So basically, having to do it previously would involve that the file server guy or the cluster guy would have to reach out to the application owner, and the SQL Server says, hey, I need to do management. Can you please disconnect while
schedule
I do the management?
Schedule it, send some emails.
Exactly.
Yep.
And in the meantime, your whatever line of business application was running on SQL Server, it goes down, and you're not making sales or whatever that application is doing.
Right.
So let's go ahead and do a simple move operation. So what I instructed the cluster to do now is to take the one resource that is, was running on node A and basically move it over to node B. And as you can see, resulting down here is that while we moved it over, we had a slight stall, and I underline, it's just a stall. There is no error surface to SQL Server. So SQL Server doesn't see this happening at all, except that it seems that I/O is a bit slow for the moment. And then after a couple of seconds, it picks back right up.
So we didn't have to bring a disk offline, we didn't have to shut down the resource, this just happened, no downtime.
And the other, so what you see here is you see now that I'm running all the SQL workload on just one node in the cluster, we're actually running at slightly less performance, but that's okay, we're running, right? You can see we're running currently at about 4,000 transactions per second. Now once I'm done with my maintenance, I can then move it back. So I just go do the simple operation again, so move it back, which is going to slightly stall the I/O for a couple of seconds, and then it's going to pick back right up, and I have my performance back that I had to begin with when I'm using both nodes in my cluster.
Very nice. Failover with no downtime.
Exactly. Completely transparent. That's why we call it, from a file server perspective, this is the SMB transparent failover feature.
Very nice. Now, you mentioned in the scenario about patching. Now, patching clusters today, it's difficult, right? You have to pause a node, you have to move everything off that node, patch it, reboot it, check for other patches, reboot it, unpause the node, move everything back, and that's just on one node. Repeat it 16 times, 64 times now. So I know that we spend a lot of time looking at patching. What can we do to make that easier? And we came up with a feature called Cluster Aware Updating. Could you talk a little more about that?
Well, that was one of the biggest causes of downtime, is you if you had to make changes, whether it was a security patch to the operating system, updates to application or third-party software, firmware updates, anything that you had to do that required patching, typically required interruption in the service or a lot of work and planning. So what we did was try to make that easy. So we built a system called Cluster Aware Updating that will essentially handle the orchestration of that. So it will figure out what you need to do, look at all of the servers, and line up the updates that need to be made to each server, which might be different but from one server to the next. And then it will go in and automatically move the services that are running on one server, move them to other nodes of the cluster, so that this node can be updated. There's a new mode in the cluster service called maintenance mode that will allow us to tell it to go into maintenance mode so that nothing else gets put on that, so we can drain all the load off. Then when that node is sitting idle, we apply the patches. The cluster aware updating will validate that all the patches have been done correctly and successfully. Then it will reboot if necessary, then bring the services that were originally there back onto that node, move on to the next node, and it will do that all the way through the cluster. You can do that from an admin machine, or you can even do it as a clustered service on the cluster itself, making it a clustered, self-updating cluster that will run that automatically whenever it needs to make updates.
That's so, very nice, yeah.
Yeah, for example, you saw the operations that I did before manually. That's essentially what Cluster Aware Updating would just orchestrate for you. So you wouldn't actually have to do this for the patching cycle.
That's very nice. And you know, one of the questions I often get asked about this is, how is this different from the VMM 2012 updating utility? They have a updating tool. And the big difference is with the VMM one, it only patches Hyper-V hosts. So it does kind of a similar operation, pulls in nodes, failing over VMs, live migrated VMs. But this goes a little further because this can patch any type of cluster. File yep. servers, DHCP servers, application servers. So it's really taking it to the next step and making this a patched solution for all of your Windows Server infrastructure.
Yes.
Now, we mentioned live migration a little more. I know there's been a lot of improvements made around virtualization as well. Specifically, I know about the virtual machine prioritization. You know, we can rank virtual machines, whether the high important ones right. should come on first, then medium, then low. But one of the biggest features people are excited about are these new types of live migration. Could you talk a little more about that?
Yes, so let me focus in specifically on the storage live migration part, which is completely new in Windows Server 2012. So with storage live migration, we can transparently, underneath any VM, we can move the storage from one location to another. So for example, let's say I have a number of Hyper-V hosts that each have the virtual machines with the machine files locally onto the machine. And I want to move them off to some shared storage, let's say this particular transparent cluster that I just had. Then I can just go in and pick the virtual machines and say, I want a storage live migrate. I can point to the remote share, just enter whack whack, and then the path for the share, and say, go migrate. Now, what's going to happen underneath the covers is the Hyper-V is going to start moving the data over, and then once the data is over and completely in sync, then Hyper-V is going to do the cutover. And that is completely transparent to the workload that is running inside each of these virtual machines. Further, I mean, you can see storage live migration is another good capability that if you have a system where you got a number of areas in your shared storage that is like a hotspot that's very active, then you can simply storage live migrate that particular a couple of virtual machines to another location, which again completely transparent to the virtual machine workload, and you balance your across your storage.
So if you need to do some very destructive maintenance to the storage and you want to keep your VMs running, in theory you could storage live migrate the yeah. VHDs, yeah. the file systems off, repair the storage, replace it, do whatever updates, and then storage live migrate back with no downtime for the virtual machine.
Completely. You can migrate it all off of one cluster onto another cluster.
It's also part of being able to do live migration of the VMs between clusters, because the VM needs to be able to access the storage, and typically shared storage is specific to a cluster. Now you can move it to a common location such as a file server that is accessible by both clusters and move the live VM to another cluster or to a non-clustered location.
So a lot of flexibility in really how you manage the environment.
Yeah, it gives a lot more flexibility. You don't have to make the decision up front of that's where I'm going to have the storage for this VM forever. Unless I take it down and manually do a bunch of changes. You can make those changes on the fly if you need to reconfigure, if you have more load than you expect, or if you need more storage than you expect, for instance.
Excellent. And I know another big feature people are excited about are concurrent live migrations, being able to run
yes.
multiple simultaneous live migrations between any pair of, not just cluster nodes, but now any pair of hosts over the network.
Yes.
So long
mm-hmm.
as there's network connectivity, we can live migrate multiple VMs. Now, I think we've done a good job of kind of talking about availability throughout the stack, from the hardware, OS, virtual machines, but what about beyond the data center? Have we made improvements to have data center availability now?
We have. There are lots of degrees of what kinds of requirements different companies might have. And there are obviously some companies that need very high-end solutions that we have partners that provide some of those, but we wanted to address disaster recovery in a lightweight, simple, easy to use way that would give people a solution that currently don't have either the expertise or the financial resources to have disaster recovery. So Hyper-V replica is the feature that was implemented, and it's much like the complexity of the UI that Klaus just showed you. You go to the Hyper-V manager, you say you want to replicate that VM to another location, to another Hyper-V host, and it will do snapshot-based differential replication of the VM to another location that can be in another data center, could be even replicated to a cloud service provider so that you could bring the VM up in a cloud if your data center goes down, lose power or lose connectivity.
That's a great solution because with today's technology, Windows Server 2008.2, while we have multi-site clustering, you need to use a third-party replication vendor. That's more money, but this is really building it right into the box. You get Windows Server 2012, you get this replication. It's asynchronous, but it's a great solution, especially you know if there's financial restrictions.
Yes, yep. It's a very cost-effective
And it can be done
solution.
with application coherent snapshot coordination as well, so that you have a coherent data set at the other side.
Could you talk a little more about that? I'm not quite that familiar with that term.
Well, if you just copy data while an application is running, that data may or may not have all a coherent set of data. So SQL Server, for instance, it may be writing things to the database, but there's a system in Windows called VSS that's a snapshot manager that tells SQL, hey, we're going to take a snapshot, write all your data to the disk, and then pause. We make a snapshot so that when you bring back up a SQL database on that snapshot, it doesn't have to go through rebuilding consistency after you bring it back up. And that's integrated with the way that we do the Hyper-V replica snapshots so that you can have application coherent snapshots at the other end when you bring up the VM.
Wow, that's excellent. So, I mean, I guess really the key message here is we're not just providing high availability anymore, we're now really providing continual availability. Yep. You lose storage, network, servers, hey, we could keep everything up and running. So that's great. Thank you so much for that summary.
Something for everyone across the board.
Yes. Something for everyone. Great. Well, what are the calls to action? Where can people go to learn more about this?
Well, the release candidate of Windows Server 2012 is released. It's on the web. So I encourage people to go download it, try it out. It's easier to use than previous versions, and there's a lot of really interesting new things. So go try it out. There's lots of blogs and material that we've been posting, white papers on how to use particular aspects of it. So if there's something that people are particularly interested in, just go to Microsoft.com or MSDN, do a search. And there's probably a white paper or blog that describes how to use that. And then I guess the third thing I'd suggest is for people to talk to their suppliers, the OEMs that they buy servers from, or their vendors. And there are lots of vendors that are hard at work building systems based on Windows Server 2012. And actually, one thing I'd add to that is that we have partners that are implementing the SMB failover capabilities so that they can have third-party storage solutions that will do that kind of continuously available storage for Hyper-V by the time that we get Windows out in general availability.
Excellent. Well, that's a great summary. Gene, Klaus, thank you so much for your time. Final thing I want to remind our viewers, if they want to learn more about high availability, the Microsoft Virtual Academy, www.microsoftvirtualacademy.com has a dedicated track to high availability solutions, and we've just come out with a new track on Windows Server 2012 first preview. So check that out. Thanks again for your time, and enjoy the rest of TechEd.
Thank you, Simon.